This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Bernstein and McKnight live from Sloan Park, presented by 19 Crimes, Cheers to the Infamous, and Sterling Vineyards, always polished, never dull, and by Team Hochberg. Call Team Hochberg or visit 56David.com. Theo Epstein is the Cubs president of baseball operations, and he joins us now here on The Score. How are things?
Great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming by. Your scouting skills are still on point, and I can tell you this because as you walked in, you saw it on my face that I had had the night that I had, which only leads me to believe that, you know, walking through the clubhouse and everything, you could identify still a ball player who had himself a night and maybe needs to be replaced by his platoon mate for an afternoon. I'm glad to know you still have the eye.
that's not what we're looking at with Darvish and Kipnis being scratched either, for the record. Both are ill.
Are they feeling all right? I mean, it sounds like it's
going to
be a thing.
Yeah, you know, it's been going around. Yeah. You know, Rossi probably kicked it off with missing the first few games, but it's been going around. I mean, we haven't had it pervasive through the whole clubhouse as some teams do, but yeah, it's got its pockets. It's hitting people.
In all seriousness, how much are you and MLB talking about potential decisions regarding coronavirus?
It's a daily conversation. MLB has a task force, and they're in touch with the CDC and the WHO, and you know they're doing a lot of planning for all different possible situations. And then they've encouraged each team to put together subcommittees just so that there's good communication between the 30 teams in the league and then within each organization. So we have a subcommittee. Randy Bush is representing baseball operations, and the different departments are represented. Just talking through scenarios, things as simple as, you know, MLB's memo to the players. So we had a meeting this morning to make sure the players all, you know, have the basic information about washing hands and being smart and things like that. So I think, you know, at times like these, I just fall back on, you know, talk to the experts, the only ones who really know what they're talking about, and then be transparent. You know, never hide the ball, always just be fully upfront with fans and players and all the constituents, and hope for the best.
I know you spoke to reporters yesterday a bit, but for our listeners who missed that, your conversation with Major League Baseball about London and the Cardinals series is where at this point, knowing your plans?
Just that it's being monitored, and you know, I think everyone realizes there's a chance that it won't happen, but as of now, it's on, and they're going to make a call on that at an appropriate time and probably, you know, with caution in mind. But as of now, it's on.
Has Christian Yelich's contract affected any discussions you may be having?
Not really. You know, it's just another data point. And I think we're at the point of spring training. Not that we won't have any conversations with our players, but the focus is really shifting on the field for 2020. And so publicly, all I'll say about that is we're continuing to make efforts to sign our guys, but with a couple notable exceptions, they've been fruitless, and not too much good can come from just talking about it. So,
we had Chris Bryant on to start our whole trip down here on Monday, and you know, in him, in talking the way he's talked, you know, just kind of putting things out there the way he's put things out there, I kind of sensed relief and even a bit of optimism that his understanding of where this team needs to be at the deadline and what could happen if it's not was a good thing, was a source of optimism that it's out there. We can talk about it. Now let's go play baseball. Am I right in sensing that? Are you happy that that's kind of the feel that these guys have?
You know, I get the sense that the guys are really happy to still be together and have another crack at this. And, you know, obviously the last 5 years have been overwhelmingly successful as a whole, but you know, in a sense to right the wrong, you know, of the way last year ended and the way the year before that ended, and that, you know, there are no excuses. We're together. We're healthy. We need to define what we are. And this is a good opportunity to go do that. There's no sense talking about what happens if it doesn't come together. I think it's kind of obvious, but it's a good opportunity to go win a World Series.
We talked to Jed Hoyer about this several weeks ago, but how do you determine, as you watch Craig Kimbrell, and he only had, what, 20? Was it 20 innings?
21, yeah.
How do you know what was a bump in the road and what was just variance in performance and what could be signs of genuine decline?
Well, first of all, you know, he's been such an elite performer going into last year that there's room for decline and for him to still be elite. That's how exceptional his performance was. But last year it was just so unusual. You know, he was asked to do something that no closer that I could think of has ever had to do, is kind of skip spring training, get a couple months into the year and ramp up and hit the ground running, and obviously didn't go well. So I think we're just looking this spring to, you know, compare where he's been in spring training's past. And I thought yesterday was a real positive. You know, he was sitting 95, 96 without effort. And, you know, he got his hand on the side of the ball on a couple fastballs. One was hit out of the park, but the other ones that he was behind him and had good finish, he got swing and miss. His breaking ball looked really good, almost regular season ready. So for first spring training outing for a closer, and based on where he's been in the past and how much velo he tends to add through the course of the spring, I thought it was a positive.
We talked to John Lester yesterday, and he mentioned that at points during last season, he was kind of, he put it, tempted to try other things because he wasn't the guy that he used to be. You know, whether that was pitches or whether that was an approach, he kind of didn't want to get into either one of those. But it sounded like pitches to me. And I wonder if that's, you know, kind of part of the conversation with John, getting back to throwing the kinds of things that he used to throw, but maybe being a bit more accurate with it is the focus, or more convicted of his pitches?
Yeah, you know, it's an ongoing conversation. Tommy Hotovy did a great job, as he does with all our pitchers, of once the year's over, kind of summarizing for them, here's what went well, here's what didn't go well, here's, you know, what you're trying to do, here's what you may be underutilized. And with John, you know, his bread and butter has always been the glove side of the plate and using his four-seam fastball and cutter into righties and establishing that, and then working off of that. And as his career has evolved, he's been able to expand and do a much better job of using the other side of the plate away to righties into lefties. But I think, you know, sometimes you get caught adapting almost too much, and then you lose your bread and butter and you lose your identity as a pitcher. So I think it's just trying to strike that right balance with making sure his four-seamer glove side and cutter off of it are locked in, and then expanding from there and still having the different weapons. He now also throws a two-seam fastball. He throws a changeup, obviously his curveball, and being able to get the right balance of not losing his identity but also being able to be unpredictable and pitch to a game plan.
With all the changes that you've made, the manager, the coaches, the behind-the-scenes infrastructure, hiring directors of hitting and pitching, I could sit here and list all day. Is it matching up so far to what you envisioned, or are you every day trying to make sure that this looks like what you want it to look like?
Yeah, it's really been great. I think that's a credit to a lot of the work that went on by some of the new hires and the new remaining employees who are in restructured roles this winter, getting ready. So they hit the ground running even before spring training started. There was pitching camps and hitting camps, and then with our minor league players. And before that, there were get-togethers with just the staff to make sure everyone was on the same page. And you know, the oldest school hitting coach exposing him to the new technology, so it wasn't new to him. And then at the same time, now we're pairing up our hitting coaches, so we have an old school guy and a new school guy together in tandem at each level, and making sure all our bases are covered. But it's been great. You know, you walk down and you see you know, these experts, guys who've been doing pitch design for years and years and years outside of Major League Baseball, and now they're in and seeing how good they are at what they do, and every single minor league pitcher, you know, going through that lab and optimizing their stuff. It's things that we've been doing here, but now the entire department is based on it. We're a data-driven department, no ifs, ands, or buts, but we're also player-centric, and we remember that the players are human beings. They have needs besides just, you know, increasing the spin efficiency on a certain pitch. So it's just great to sort of drop that veil. And we built this, our player development department, 8 years ago and had a lot of success, but then we're trying to retrofit things in, and you know, their egos and personalities get involved. You had success one way, sometimes it can be hard to fully adopt new technologies that are reshaping the game. So starting from scratch, I think ultimately was the right way to do it.
So I'm looking down at the field, I think it was yesterday, and I saw an enormous man with a giant beard, And in the back of my head, I knew Mike Napoli was here. I had no idea that he'd let it go that much with the beard. It's absolutely massive. And we're talking with Ron Kermit. He's like, yeah, that's Mike Napoli. What went into hiring him? Is he one of the guys that just has a job that he feels like doing on a given day? Does he have a specific assignment? Is it to just make sure that David is kind of comfortable in everything that he's doing?
Yeah, that beard is just a foreshadowing of things to come. He said he's threatening not to shave at all during the course of the year.
How so is that
check back in October.
My God.
Yeah, he hasn't experienced the summer heat in Chicago on a daily. But although he played a lot in Texas, so I guess he's used to it. But we'll see. No, he was a huge hire for us. We tried to reconsider hiring him as our bench coach last year when we were looking for a bench coach for Joe when Davey left. And he brings so much to the table. He's one of these guys that players always point to as being really influential in their career. That he's got tremendous credibility because of his career accomplishments and then just the way he goes about his business, his swagger. He's sort of like the ultimate player's player in a lot of ways. He's got a lot of street cred with the way he lives his life, and someone guys want to be around and knows how to work, knows how to have fun, just kind of gets it all. And then on top of that, the part that people don't know is he's a baseball rat. You know, he obviously came up as a catcher working under Mike Socha, and then moved to first base, spent time as a DH, and just one of these guys on the bench breaking everything down. And he understands the mental side of the grind and how to get the most out of yourself, how to maintain the confidence in the face of adversity. That's huge. So, yeah, he's going to be involved in a number of different things. I think we're excited to have him on the bench. You know, while we're hitting, you know, let our hitters kind of use him as another sounding board, you know, where sometimes you want to not your hitting coach to be able to go to and kind of talk the mental side of the game. So he's going to make a big impact.
Last couple of years, our fall has been marked by the end of season press conference that you have where it's, you know, an hour or, you know, close to an hour and 20 minutes or whatever it is, answering every last question as honestly as you can. And we hear a little bit of that sort of meatball fan side of things in there about how much it hurts, about how invested you are. And you talked a lot about accountability, talked a lot about change. I know you wanted to take back the use of the word reckoning because so many of us seized on how dramatic a word that was. But it was a great word. If that Theo from last fall were right here now and saw this roster constructed as it is, what would he think?
I think if he were dropped into this camp, he'd be really optimistic, you know, about what we have. And you know, more than just the names. I think, you know, to being totally candid with you, I think he would be surprised at the lack of change that we had, because we certainly set out with the idea of making broader changes, and that was not the environment. You know, there just was not that active of a trade market. And, you know, look no further than, you know, the sort of the Red Sox experience with Mookie Betts, and, you know, for a long time there were a lot of big names rumored on the trade market, and only one got traded, and it was sort of a unique dynamic with Mookie. So it just was not an active trade market. It was a very robust and an active free agent market, one that we were involved in a very particular sector of. And I think, honestly, we could talk about this later, but I think early returns on that are great. You know, we had to build an entire bullpen without spending any money, and the guys we've gotten are, knock on wood, and super early, but really impressive and look like the guys that you normally get when you spend big money in the bullpen. So anyway, he'd be surprised by the lack of change, but I think he'd be really encouraged by what we've seen here attitudinally, and then also just performance wise. I mean, you look at, you know, I always kind of come back to Hap, because he's somebody that people are so quick to write off, and he went through so much last year, but he's an example of someone who's just different. He's in such a better place. He struck out one time this spring. He's putting balls in play. He's having unbelievable situational at-bats. And like what he went through last year, what we went through last year that led to that frustration and led us to want to make changes, has led to transformation and some change. And it's not necessarily trading him while his value's down for someone else to bring in so we can feel good about having made changes. It's being a little bit patient, being smart player development-wise, having tough conversations, and then ultimately it's on him as a player being accountable and growing, and he has. Everything is different about him offensively right now. You saw, you know, his at-bat a couple days ago, laying off the high fastball and then hitting a home run on a breaking ball down in the zone in a sweet spot. And it's not going to be perfect. You know, he did punch out once on a high fastball this year already, and you could sort of hear the grumble, there we go again. But that's not who he is anymore. You know, he's aware of it and making the adjustments. So I just use him as an example of, same name. I think different player, different part of his career. And as a team, there's no doubt that if most of our guys continue on that path, have, address their weaknesses, continue to grow as players, that we have the talent to win the World Series.
Did the lack of a trade market this last offseason take the wind out of your sails at all? If it did, were any of the changes that were able to be made, were they spurred by, we're just up against it here, I guess we got to go back in this direction?
No, those changes were going to be made regardless. It's something that we've been contemplating, for a while, and it was something that had to be done, and we did it. The lack of a trade market, I mean, it can be frustrating at times when, you we're trying to make things better for the short term and also for the long haul, and we haven't been able to do a lot to address the long haul. So that's something that's still on our radar screen every day and something that we have to keep in mind as we start the season. But no, you just throw yourself into what you can. We needed to make really good decisions with what minor league free agents to go after, which pitchers sort of at the bottom of the free agent market to offer 40-man spots to, so that we could get the right guys and bring them in and make sure we got them. We needed to be smart on waiver claims, smart with small trades, and so we threw ourselves into that even as we sort of waited out the bigger trade market that never really materialized.
I watched Steven Souza have a round of batting practice that my jaw just dropped. I mean, really was hitting it hard in all directions, and the bat looks quick. He's a big, strong dude. If he's 100% healthy, that could be a find.
Yeah, he's an impressive player. He can also run, and he's a plus defender in the outfield. So he was a pretty dynamic, well-rounded player coming into his own when he suffered just a spate of really devastating injuries. And he worked out for a number of teams. I think it was in early January, and he really lit up our scout up there. I think it was Jason Cooper up in the Pacific Northwest. You saw him and say he looks fully healthy. He's moving around great, and he became somebody that we were then prepared to offer a 40-man spot to, and we were able to keep the money in an area where it made a lot of sense for us, balancing the risk. And yeah, I think he hasn't seen a lot of live pitching at all the last 2 years, so he looks really good in BP. He's driven some balls in games. He's having quality at bats. There's still some heaters in the zone that he's just missing that I think as he gets more reps, he's going to be on. And yeah, he has the potential to be a really important player for us.
Reading around today, it sounds like Major League Baseball and the Players Association are kind of going back and forth a little bit about technology in the dugout. It sounds like on the table, at least, is the potential of restricting technology almost altogether as soon as you walk down the tunnel and first pitch starts. Is that a good direction for baseball to go? Is that a place you expect things to be?
I think some adjustments are appropriate for sure. And I think it's both there's a short-term fix and there's a longer-term fix. You know, getting rid of some technology might be part of a short-term fix, obviously, because it's now proven that teams were abusing the ability to have live real-time video and with the replay system near the dugout. Technology can also be part of a longer-term fix, though, when you talk about as in the NFL, we have the ability, the head coach and the coordinator and the quarterback, to communicate pre-snap and get the play in. That eliminates the need to have signals, therefore you can't steal signals or signs. And so the same thing could potentially be possible in baseball someday, where you have the pitcher and the catcher and the dugout communicating, and then that would eliminate sign stealing, and it would also speed the game up because you wouldn't have to go through any signs, let alone three different sets of signs, even with nobody on base, to make sure the other team's not stealing your stuff. So I think, less technology now might help, and it might be a good thing. It might help get players out of the video room and into the dugout and get them in a little bit more of a mindful state during the game anyway, which is probably a good thing. But long term, I think technology is also part of the solution.
Have you, in the wake of the Astros punishment and waiting on what's going to happen in Boston, have you at any point felt compelled to reissue an organizational statement internally? because we're seeing if GMs are going to go down and say like a Sarbanes-Oxley legislation where you are expected to know about these things, must you then say, in case you didn't know, if you hear something about it, you know, mandatory report it to me. I've got to know. I want to know. Was there anything after the fact to say this can't happen here?
Yes. And also just repeating the standard protocols that we have in place to begin with. So every year in spring training, as part of my speech, I talk about the importance of winning with integrity. And that's what we stand for, and that's all we'll tolerate here. And this year, it was easy to expand that from a couple sentences into a full paragraph, because there are a lot of good examples of what happens when you don't compete with integrity, and winning doesn't mean anything if you don't compete with integrity. So that was easy. We are going to, instead of just incorporating the standard sort of like disclaimers and warnings and rule following directives into our standard daily meeting at the end of spring training, we'll have our own full compliance meeting to make sure everyone knows the rules and that everyone's set up in a way that allows them to do their job in full compliance with the rules. But that's always been a part of how we do things. I've slept fine at night. I mean, I know that we were not, we haven't, I don't even think we've been accused of doing anything illegal with respect to the on-field competition. And there are a number of teams that, you know, there are other route that there are still rumors about, but not us. But yeah, of course you want to make sure the whole organization knows up and down it's not tolerated.
Theo, awesome talking with you. Always is. Really appreciate
Thanks, guys.
The time.
Enjoy your time. Maybe watch a movie tonight. Get some shut-eye.
Good advice.
Parasite. Go for
Probably
it.
Probably won't awesome. Happen.
It counts as reading, too.
I still have to see that.
I can't believe you haven't yet.
You know, I just keep forgetting.
It's literally one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Is it that good?
Yep. It's really good. It wasn't what I expected. It took, obviously, a major turn and got a little bit unbelievable at parts. It's so well done that the message is on point for the times. So I'll leave it at that. So
okay. So which family was the parasite?
Both.
Okay.
You.
Yes. Right.
That's the answer.
Yes. That's
All
the,
of us.
God, that's the answer. Everybody. Yep. Thanks, Theo.
All right, guys. Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.